Yo, what's up? Saturday night. It's 7:45 p.m. Da Nang, Vietnam, Saturday, December 19th, 2020. And this is episode three of I Hate Everyone. It's just me. I'm in a corner of a room. Judging you. All right. I did not write anything for this episode because who gives a shit? The only topic I have is I have two topics. The first one is Bootylicious. I was walking the other day. I like to take walks around here. And I was walking, and for some reason, I started thinking about this song, Bootylicious. I have no idea why, but sometimes I just, when you're walking and you got your blood flowing, you're exercising. Your thoughts are freely coming and going, all that shit. I just started thinking about, I don't know, I'm from America and I've been away for like 2 years, and just thinking about American culture always makes me laugh. And just, I was just like, when you things about different cultures, you're like, oh, that's interesting, or whatever. And then when you think about American culture, you're like, it's just fucking you laugh. In my for my generation, I'm not talking about what came before I was born. I'm talking about like modern, postmodern, or whatever, like the last 20, 30 years since I've been born. Our culture is just it's a little silly. And it's very money driven and vapid and soulless, and it's just all about making money. And when you explain, or when you live in America and you go to foreign country and you're away for a long period of time, you'll have to explain that to somebody, or you don't have to explain it, but being from America, you will get into conversation maybe with somebody from a different country who's never been to America. And when you talk about your culture with somebody who's never been there, you kind of like look at it differently. So anyway, I was wa taking a walk and going to the grocery store. It's been very cold here, cold and rainy. It was like sunny one day a few days ago, but other than that, the last 2 weeks since I got back to Da Nang, it's been very cold and rainy. And it's cold here, it's like 60s, 70s, as I said. And tonight it's like 60 something, 68, and it's fucking freezing. I've been in Southeast Asia for 1 year, and just 68 is freezing. Bootylicious. And I was walking and I started laughing. I was like, oh. What a, when I think of the lasting American culture, what a an achievement of our culture for Beyoncé to sing the song "Bootylicious." What an imprint. When she is gone. When America's gone, we'll always remember Bootylicious. And I wanted to read some of the lyrics from this incredibly culturally important message, Bootylicious. Here are the lyrics. Kelly, can you handle this? Michelle, can you handle this? Beyonce, can you handle this? I don't think They can handle this. Barely move, we've arrived. Looking sexy, looking fly. Baddest chick, chick inside. DJ, jam tonight. Spotted me, a tender thing. There you are, come on, baby. Don't you want to dance with me? Can you handle me? You got to do much better. If you're going to dance with me tonight, you got to work your jelly. If you're going to dance with me tonight, read my lips carefully. If you like what you see, move, groove, prove you can hang with me. By the looks, I got you shook up and scared of me. Buckle your seatbelt. It's time for takeoff. And this is the most important part of the entire song. I don't think you're ready for this jelly. I don't think you're ready for this jelly. I don't think you're ready for this because my body too bootylicious for you, babe. I don't think you're ready for this jelly. I don't think you're ready for this jelly. I don't think you're ready for this because my body too bootylicious for you, babe. Baby, can you handle this? Baby, can you handle this? Baby, can you handle this? I don't think you can handle this. And then she has a couple more verses. So she's about to break you off. H-Town going hard, read my hips, slap my thighs, swing my hair, squint my eyes. Looking hot, smelling good, grooving like I'm from the hood. Over my shoulder, I blow you a kiss. Can you handle this? Okay, and this is the chorus, which I looked this up earlier. And she sings it 10 times in this song. You heard that right, 10 times. Singing a chorus 10 times when it's this, I don't think you're ready for this jelly. I don't think you're ready for this jelly. I don't think you're ready for this because my body too bootylicious for you, babe. Singing that 10 times in one song. It's mind-numbing. Move your body up and down, move your booty, touch the ground. I can't help but wonder why. Is my vibe too vibalicious for you, babe? Okay, so in this song, she creates a word, vibalicious. I mean, that's talent. I shake my jelly at every chance. When I whip my hips, you slip into a trance. I'm hoping you can handle all this jelly that I have. Now let's cut a rug while we scat some jazz. And I am going to jump off the balcony on my second floor, so you're going to hear it. Ready? Here I go. Yeah, booty wishes! Okay, and then she sings the chorus. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times in a row. She uses a sample from Stevie Nicks. All right, where are we at here? Yeah, so those are the lyrics for Bootylicious, and culturally important song for America, very well known, Destiny's Child. Songwriters, okay, Beyonce is one of the songwriters. And then if you look up the other songwriters, this is just with Google. One is a dude who looks like he's from like a science fiction movie. And he used to date Lady Gaga. His name is Rob Fusari. And he like stole money from her or some shit. Now, if you Google him, and if you know anything about music producers who write shit like this, he looks exactly like what you would expect him to write. Looks like a douchebag. Grammy-nominated record producer and songwriter Rob Fusari is known for having number one hits with Beyonce, Kelly Rowland, Will Smith, Whitney Houston, and Lady Gaga. That's right. Co-writer, record producer from Livingston, New Jersey. And then the first article when you look up this guy, Lady Gaga sued by producer Rob Fusari, Billboard. This is where that article is published. Rob Fusari filed a $30.5 million lawsuit against the Grammy Award-winning pop star Lady Gaga, saying his protege and former girlfriend ditched him as her career soared. So this is one of the co-writers of Bootylicious, record producer, sued Lady Gaga for $30 million because she left him when her career soared. I didn't know you could sue people for that. That's pretty cool. Suing people for breaking up with you for $30 million, like, that's awesome. Only in America, that's what's so great. You can sue people for breaking up with you. Okay, Bootylicious cover. Here's, I'm going to Wikipedia. I think the cover for this record is what's the coolest thing about it, because the lyrics are just make me want to jump off. It's Bootylicious. And they got Destiny's Child on the cover, very scantily dressed. Kelly Rollins in a bikini, pink with white polka dots. And Beyonce is laying down, and she looks a little tired. You know, it's hard putting all that work in to write lyrics like that. It's really difficult. She looks sexy, looks tired. It looks like the record cover looks like something you would see, like, you know, it looks like a joke, but it also looks like it's something from like a different planet, like it's a different universe or something. It's so strange. Recorded in Sugar Hill Studios, Houston, Texas, and also Sound on Sound Studios in New York City. There's a B-side, Cards Never Lie. No idea what that. Okay, so it was recorded in 2000. R&B, dance pop, funk, release Columbia Records. Wow, Columbia. 3:28, that's the length. So Rob Fusari is a producer, I just mentioned. And then there's some other guy, Falante Moore. I don't know what the fuck that is. But something that I thought was interesting is when you go down to like the way it was composed, the composition of this very important song. They used a sample of Stevie Nicks, but the producer, according to Wikipedia, Rob Fusari, that I mentioned, he wanted to record the guitar part, but Beyonce's dad, who was his manager, people don't want to hear Rob Fusari, producer from Livingston, New Jersey. No offense, but that's not what sells records. What sells records is people believing that the artist is everything. So some guy, his daughter's in the music industry, and he's a philosopher, and he knows how to sell records. And Kelly Rowland has said that Bootylicious is the most irritating Destiny's Child song. She's heard it too many times. That's the whole point of the song. Okay, what's crazy is it debuted at number 66 on Billboard Hot 100 on June 9th, 2001, climbed to its peak position 9 weeks later. The song peaked. Okay, it was behind Mariah Carey's Lover Boy when it peaked at number 5. And Mariah Carey's Lover Boy was number 2 on the Hot 100 singles charts. And Bootylicious was released in July in 2001 in the UK. And debuted and peaked at number 2 on the UK singles chart behind Atomic Kitten. I don't know what the hell that is. Okay. Cultural impact. The song created moderate controversy in a time when the late 1990s and early 2000s music was pushing the boundaries of female sexuality. Destiny's Child was claiming G-rated fun and confidence and body image through the lyrics, yet the music video suggested much more, with the group wearing much makeup, form-fitting clothes, performing sexually suggestive dancing, and the video featuring close-ups of several dancers' buttocks. I mean, that's the point of the song. That's why, let's scroll down what it sold. Lots of remixes, different, okay. So it was in the charts in Australia, Austria, Belgium, Canada, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Ireland, Italy, all around Europe, New Zealand, and the UK. It was much more popular in the UK, Switzerland, They're just jamming it down everybody's throats. And this is where I wanted to bring up Australia. The song with the record is a single, platinum, over 70,000 copies in Australia. Went gold in UK, over 400,000, sorry, gold in UK. And then in platinum in America, over 1 million certified units of sales. 1 million. You heard the lyrics. You heard them. I don't think you're ready for this jelly. I don't think you're ready for this jelly. I don't think you're ready. Is my body too bootylicious for you, babe? And one of the co-writers is a dude who sued Lady Gaga for $30 million because she broke up with him when he got famous. That's what you're supposed to do, man. And then 30 million. I don't know if he won. I'm not even going to click this article because I don't care. But I just wanted to talk about Bootylicious and the important cultural impact and the message it sends. It's just so important to our history and our culture. And I mean, you just come up with the most vapid, empty lyrics and you create a song that's you know is going to sell as many records as possible by being easily to repeat, get stuck in somebody's head, gets all over the country and across the world, and it's about pumping it into somebody's head, brains, repeatedly, until they just even though somebody in the group is like, I've heard this song too many times and it's the most irritating song. She is most of the vocals on it. So that's Bootylicious, you know, just a pillar of American culture in the early 2000s. Incredibly important song, and I don't know what else is there to say about it. It's just, it's Bootylicious, man. It's fucking Bootylicious, and you got to cheers to Beyonce's jelly. I mean, it's fucking Bootylicious. Okay, so another segment. The only thing I had was something that I just came across through my job as a researcher and copywriter, copy editor for an educational website, blah, blah, blah. Athenian democracy. So I think a lot of what's going on, it's important to remember in America with the founding fathers started creating or debating on what the Constitution should be. They studied a lot of previous democracies around the world or different ways of organizing government, blah, blah, blah. And I know that they used Greek and Roman history and culture was included. And I think Athenian democracy sounds so cool, doesn't it? I mean, Athens, Greece, culture that stretches back over 2,000 years, almost 3,000 years. I don't think the average American knows anything about ancient Greece. The more I learn about it, the more complex and rich it seems to be. So this is kind of, for me, what I was just talking about, an empty, vapid culture based on almost like exploiting mass media to make lots of money. This is the opposite. And it was thousands of years ago, and it seems to be more rich and meaningful and philosophical and historically important to the species. Just interesting for me. Okay, so just reading from Wikipedia. Athenian democracy, and it developed around the 6th century BC in the Greek city-state of Athens, comprising the city of Athens and the surrounding territory of Attica. So this is commonly used today, right off the bat, when you, like if you, from in America, when you have like Philadelphia, big city, it's also its own county. New York City's like that. If you go out west, Denver is like that, Denver County. Athenian democracy is often described as the first known democracy in the world. Other Greek cities set up democracies, most following the Athenian model, but none are as well documented as Athens' democracy. Athens practiced a political system of legislation and executive bills. Participation was far from open to all residents, but was instead limited to adult male citizens who were probably no more than 30%, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so it's same in America. Adult males, same in France, same in America, thousands of years later. Man, women had a fucking shitty go, didn't they? Solon in 594 BC, Cleisthenes, I'm not even going to try to pronounce these, another guy, Ephialtes, 462 BC, contributed to the development of Athenian democracy because they broke up the power of the nobility by organizing citizens into 10 groups based on where they lived rather than on their wealth. That's what you see today in America, groups of people based on where they live, not on their wealth, even though in America, where you live is based on your wealth, pretty much. The longest lasting democratic leader was Pericles. After his death, Athenian democracy was twice briefly interrupted by oligarchic revolutions toward the end of the Peloponnesian War. It was modified somewhat after it was restored under Euclides. The most detailed accounts of the system are of this 4th century modification rather than the Periclean system. Democracy was suppressed by the Macedonians in 322 BC. The Athenian institutions were later revived, but how close they were to real democracy is debatable. Okay, so democracy was suppressed by the Macedonians. Okay, so that's a different dynasty. Wow, so complicated over there and around the Greece. Same with Rome. Thousands of years ago, all these different cultures and societies that most people would have no fucking clue of their names today. That fucking is fascinating to me. It's just like thinking of a whole entirely different world, different universe, different fucking dimension. It's just really wild. Okay. Let's see development. Athens was never the only polis in ancient Greece and instituted a democratic regime. Aristotle points to other cities that adopted governments in the democratic style. However, accounts of the rise of democratic institutions are in reference to Athens, since only this city-state has sufficient historical records to speculate on the rise and nature of Greek democracy. So that's why it's so important, because of historical records. It's very interesting. Before the first attempt at democratic government, Athens was ruled by a series of archons. Archons. Heard that name before. Archon is a Greek word that means ruler. Frequently used as a title of specific public office. It is the masculine present participle of the verb to be first, to rule. I've heard archon in like conspiracy shit. If you've never heard of David Icke, he talks about archons. Like different interdimensional beings called archons that wanted to rule over Earth. That's a whole different story. Okay, Athens was ruled by a series of archons or chief magistrates. All right, 561 BC, the nascent democracy was overthrown by the tyrant Pisistratos, but was reinstated after the expulsion of his son. Okay, so it's going back and forth, back and forth. The third set of reforms was instigated by Ephialtes. In the wake of the Athens' disastrous defeat in the Sicilian campaign in 413 BC, a group of citizens took steps to limit the radical democracy they thought was leading the city to ruin. God, this sounds like something from Star Wars or something. Okay. So aftermath, Alexander the Great. Important Greek or is Macedon? Alexander III of Macedon, commonly known as Alexander the Great, was a king of the ancient Greek kingdom of Macedon and a member of the Argive dynasty. Born in 356 BC. Oh, he was really young. Oh man, he was super young when he died. But I think when he died, 3rd century BC, that was like the end of antiquity, I think, for Greece. So their democracy was not very stable, I guess, or not for that long. But when I have another window opening for classical Athens. Classical Athens, the city of Athens. Yes, the classical period of ancient Greece, 480 BC to 323, which was the death of Alexander the Great. But, so that's 160 years or so, 150 years. Classical Athens was the major urban center of the notable city-state. Athenian democracy was established in 508 BC. The system remained remarkably stable with a few brief interruptions. Okay, for 180 years. It's under 200 years. The peak of Athenian hegemony was achieved in the 440s and 430s BC, so the Age of Pericles. They have so many different the terminology for all of this is just fucking, it's endless. Classical period. This is what we're talking. Athenian democracy was a center for the arts, learning, and philosophy. Home of Plato's Academy, Aristotle's Lyceum. So Plato and Aristotle were gangsters at this time. Also the birthplace of Socrates, Aristophanes, Sophocles, prominent philosophers. We still study almost, 2,500 years later. It's really wild. Widely referred to as the cradle of Western civilization. Birthplace of democracy. Wow, man. Super interesting. So then out the aftermath, Alexander the Great had led a coalition of the Greek states to war with Persia in 336 BC, but his Greek soldiers were hostages for the behavior of their states as much as allies. His relations with Athens were already strained when he returned to Babylon in 324 BC. After his death of Alexander the Great, Athens and Sparta led several states to war with Macedonia and lost. This led to the Hellenistic control of Athens. Hellenistic control of Athens. Okay. What are we at here? With the Macedonian king appointing a local agent as a political governor in Athens. It's a Macedonian puppet. Macedonian puppet dictators controlling Athens. And then when Rome fought Macedonia in 200, the Athenians abolished the first two tribes and created a 12th tribe in honor of them. Okay, then Athens became autonomous, an autonomous area in 146 BC. To allow Athens to practice forms of democracy, though Rome ensured that the constitution strengthened the city's aristocracy. Under Roman rule, the archons ranked as the highest officials. So it went right back to the archons, the original rulers, Greek ruler. They were elected, and even foreigners, such as Domitian and Hadrian, so they would go on to be emperors, Roman emperors. So Rome was pretty much taken over, held the office as a mark of honor. In 88 BC, there was a revolution under the philosopher Athenion, who, as tyrant, forced the assembly to agree to elect whomever he might ask to office. So this was around the same time that Rome was becoming an empire and no longer also a democracy. So they had coincided with Greek and Athens. Okay, there was a war with Rome. The victorious Roman general, Publius Cornelius Sulla, left the Athenians their lives and did not sell them into slavery. He also restored the previous government in 86 BC. After Rome became an empire under Augustus, Caesar Augustus, the first Roman emperor reigning from 27 BC until his death in 14 AD. So he reigned for what? 40 years, probably one of the longest reigns of any emperor was the first one, Augustus. The nominal independence of Athens dissolved and its government converted to the normal type for a Roman municipality with the Senate of Decuriones. So it became like almost a Roman colony, sort of. I really don't know, man. I'm just fucking ad-libbing here. But it's just fascinating of their history. And I just wanted to read about that. That was more for myself. So the differences of culture, I really get to the culture, but some of the most popular and famous and well-known philosophers on the planet flourished and thrived during that small period of time of Athenian democracy. And then I'll go back to hear what I said. Thus, the founding fathers of the United States, who met Philadelphia in 1787, set up a Senate that eventually met on the Capitol. Okay, so it's not exactly the same, but similarities there. Okay, George Grote claimed in the History of Greece that Athenian democracy was neither the tyranny of the poor nor the rule of the mob. He argued that only by giving every citizen the vote would people ensure that the state would be run in the general interest. Okay, after World War II became the only possible political system in an egalitarian society. So I guess when you don't have democracy, you have tyranny. And that's what we're seeing today. Happy Saturday.